Welcome to episode number 2 of the Polk Institute podcast. That's right, we're doing it again, and this is going to be a regular thing. We're going to try and do it every week. Can't promise we'll do it every week. But I am your host, Michael Manahan, the co-founder of the Polk Institute. And for those of you not familiar with the Polk Institute, our goal, our mission is to provide education and support in entrepreneurship to underserved minorities. We have a one-year educational program that teaches the basics of entrepreneurship. I like to think of it as an actual master's level educational program taught completely and entirely by practitioners. In addition to that, once our students have graduated with their knowledge in entrepreneurship, we provide them with an incubator / accelerator where we have mentors who will help them launch their business. And then finally, we have relationships and are developing relationships with funding sources, whether that be angel investors, high net worth individuals, government programs, and so on, that can help those entrepreneurs get the money they need to launch their businesses. So that's what the Polk Institute is all about. The Polk Institute podcast, what we're going to try and do here is to not only highlight what the Polk Institute is doing, but introduce you to some of the people who are involved in the Polk Institute, and that could be mentors, it could be educators, it could be volunteers, it could be students. And finally, we want the Polk podcast to be a resource for entrepreneurs, for people trying to start businesses or people running businesses, that will give you ideas that you can hopefully implement in your business right now or within a very short period of time that can have an impact on what you are doing. So with that, we're going to get right to the show. I'm very pleased today to have as my guest Devin Blaine. Devin is on the board of directors of the Polk Institute. She is also the founder and CEO of the Blaine Group, a Beverly Hills-based public relations firm that has been around since... Devin, has it been 1902? Has the business been around since?
I'm not quite that old, but it's been, shall we say, a few decades.
Well, that's great. Well, congratulations and thank you for joining me on the show today.
Truly my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
So, Devin, you are on the board of directors, and you're kind of one of the first people that Gary and I got involved with the Polk Institute. Can you just maybe tell us a little bit about your involvement in the Polk Institute and kind of what attracted you to join what we're trying to accomplish?
Well, I've known both you and Gary for a long while. I admire your expertise. And Gary's just one of those remarkable people where there's never a time that I talk to him that I don't learn something. And sometimes it's just learning by watching what he does. So when he came to me with the idea for the Polk Institute and said, would you be involved? It was an automatic yes.
Well, that's great. I'm so glad that you are involved. We're just getting started. We're recruiting students now. We've got our first cohort starting in February of this year. We've got some really, really great, I call them practitioner instructors lined up to teach the program. But your specialty is obviously public relations. That's what your firm does. Give us the history of the Blaine Group. What do you do? Who are your clients? What do you do for your clients? How did you even get into this business?
Well, quick story. I was an actress and model for 10 years, and one day scheduled a meeting with my then managers. And we talked about what I wanted to do going forward, and they said, oh, yes, yes, yes. We'll keep that in mind, but we have a client that we think is going to be the next major motion picture star, and we want you to handle his PR. And I said, let me think about it. And they said, sure, have a seat across the room. Before you leave today, we want an answer. And as with most good things in my life, I said, why not? Now, I did have a journalism background in high school and college. And I resigned that first client the first month. But I had signed another client the next week and another one the next month, and decided I didn't want to be still working from my living room 20 years from then, so I started to grow the practice. Initial clients were entertainment industry. Today, our clients are largely fast-track emerging growth companies, or those who would like to be. I've literally spent a career working with entrepreneurs, and we also put authors on promotional tour. We work with a few nonprofits, and Polk Institute, of course, satisfies all of those categories because you and Gary are both authors. And we also do some crisis management when things go awry.
So tell me, I'd like to dive into the nuts and bolts, because one of the things I find as an educator, as a professor, I'll say to my students, as an example, my finance students, I'll say, okay, who here has ever heard of an investment banker? Everybody in the room puts their hand up. I said, well, who can tell me on a day-to-day basis, what does an investment banker actually do? What does an investment banker's day look like? And all the hands go down. I suspect the same thing occurs with PR or public relations. Everybody's heard of public relations. But I would think that a lot of people really do not understand what you and your staff do on a daily basis. So can you get into the nuts and bolts and kind of tell me
That's an incredibly astute question. Thank you for that. And I have interviewed many fresh-faced college graduates who, when I say, tell me, why do you want to be in PR? Start by saying, oh, I just love working with people. And I usually laugh and say, give me 3 months. We can change that.
Yes, indeed.
And there's a cadre of people who come here from all over the country, even from other countries, because they want to work in entertainment PR. They want to do red carpets. Not many of those going on right now. But they think of glamour. They think of parties. That's a very minor portion of entertainment PR. PR is typically doing a lot of planning, a lot of research, a lot of writing, a lot of strategy, a lot of hand-holding, and pitching like crazy and being told no at least 90% of the time.
Wow. And then when you say pitching, give me an example. Who are you pitching? What might be a typical pitch? Or what is the audience you're pitching to?
We are pitching to the news media, and that could be television, it could be radio, it could be podcasters, it could be online outlets or newspapers or magazines that are the right target audience for a client's market.
So when you talk about that, it sounds to me, or I'm thinking that if you took on a client, say, I don't know, back in 1990, which is what, is that 30 years ago? Jesus Christ. The people you would be pitching to could be significantly different than the people you would be pitching to today. So is that correct? And how have you seen the kind of the pitching side of it change over this last 30 years or 20 years?
Well, social media has been added to the mix. And we do not do the social side. There are people who've done it since inception and understand it better than I ever will. But we work hand in glove with them, because when we have a client on the news or an article comes out in a trade publication like ZDNet, that just happened this week, or in the Wall Street Journal, those are that's news coverage that the social media people can push out. So the exposure we got is maximized by what they do. And pitching these days is pretty much done via email. There are still a few people in the press who want a phone call. There are far more who never want a phone call.
Right.
And you need to know the difference so that you don't get someone upset with you.
Yeah, I kind of...
So there's a whole lot to learn and remember.
Yeah. I think this shows my age a little bit, but I look, there's nothing wrong with email. I use emails. I get hundreds of emails every day. But I sometimes miss that communication by phone. Where you might sit down on a morning and phone 10 people, and now you sit down on a morning, you email 10 people. And part of it is email, it's very challenging to build a personal relationship. You send out the email, great. They get the email, they read it, they respond or they don't respond. But when you get somebody on the phone, you have the opportunity to, how's your day going? What's happening? Or, what's the weather like in Chicago this morning? Are you freezing cold? Or, you get that personal kind of stuff going
exactly.
on.
Exactly. And there's nuance. Something said in an email can be read entirely different than it was intended.
Yeah, I used to teach a communications class at Cal State Dominguez Hills, where I'm a university professor. Let me put in a plug for Cal State. Cal State Dominguez Hills here in the South Bay of Los Angeles. I started out teaching communications, although I teach accounting and finance now. And one of the segments of my communications class was, of course, emails. And I think all of us have seen the disastrous results of poor email communications, where either the content is inappropriate, or alternatively, somehow the wrong person gets on the email list.
Yes, or you reply all when you're saying something negative about someone in the chain.
Never mind. Let's talk about this for a minute, because never mind the reply all when it's something negative. We here at the university, somebody will be, somebody's retiring. Okay, and the email goes out about this person's retirement to the entire faculty of Cal State Dominguez Hills at, what the faculty count is, 300-500 people. And people respond, congratulations, reply all. So I get in my inbox 50 emails that just say basically,
oh, I hate that.
Congratulations. I know, it's so annoying.
It is very annoying. It's annoying when it's only a group of 20.
It's right. It's got to the stage where the chair of my department at Cal State Dominguez Hills adds to the bottom of every email he sends out, please do not reply all. Anyway.
He's very wise to do that.
So let's talk about something that most people realize is a function of public relations, but a lot of people don't really understand it. And it's something called the press release. And I know businesses say, oh, we put out a press release, or we've got a press release. What exactly is a press release? How does it work? What is it designed to do?
A press release is designed to provide information to the press. And it covers the who, what, when, where, why, and how. What many people forget is that the press isn't there to advertise their business, their new product line. It has to be newsworthy in some way, or it's going to be ignored. So that's part of the research, part of the creative thought that needs to go behind it, or actually in front of it.
So it's making sure that something that's included in your press release is something that somebody else might think newsworthy and worthy of mention. So it's not just a drab old press release saying you've just, you know, added a released version 5.3 of your software program. Is unless it's got some really spectacular things associated with it, it's probably not going to get much coverage.
Right. The benefits probably are the focal point of that press release, or should be.
And one of the expertises, of course, that you have and that people who work for you have is writing press releases. But let me ask you about writing in general. I was talking to a client of mine who does extensive marketing over the internet, including emails. And the company's got to the size where the owner has a lot of things on her plate. She's managing sales, she's managing inventory, she's managing staffing, and all of the different things that an executive at a small company has to manage. She used to do all of her emails. She would write them herself, and she would, you know, track the open rates and the click-through rates and all of those types of things. And but she said it's time-consuming, so she's tried hiring people to write, and she says one of her issues, it's very, very difficult to find people who can write things. That she says that they write stuff, and first of all, it doesn't make sense, and secondly, even if it does, it just doesn't seem to capture the reader's imagination. And she found that when she used other people to write her emails, her click-throughs and her opens and her purchases actually declined. How do you face the challenges of finding people who can write well without having to do it all yourself?
It just takes a lot of sorting through people, and if you find someone who is a good writer, then it's a matter of editing them. And anyone who's a decent writer can be edited so that their material is good.
It
is difficult. Most people, everyone today thinks they can write because anyone can publish online. That doesn't mean they write well.
Yes, how true. My students, by the way, think they can write extremely well. And they are masters at, and I don't know how this started and where, this would be an interesting research project for an educator, but my students are masters to putting together a string of words that mean absolutely nothing. And sometimes they're words that like wouldn't even normally go together, but they manage to use all of these words in a sentence, and then you say, but this doesn't mean anything, this doesn't say anything. And yet they're really good at doing that. They can write paragraphs, by the way, like that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's...
And some people just like to use a big word that's not commonly known to attempt to impress people about how intelligent they are. And that's an absolute no-no in PR. You need to write for... Typically, they say a ninth grade student.
Yeah, it annoys me when people overcomplicate things because I think there's most of the times a fairly easy way to say most things. But the other thing that people do, which I really, and in business, just my recommendation is don't do this. Don't get hung up on the buzzwords. It's so annoying to hear. And I'll give you an example. We were interviewing somebody for the university. I was on the committee that was interviewing this individual. And of course, universities today, a big thing is diversity, right? We're concerned on the university. We want diversity. We want diversity in the student population. We want diversity in the faculty. We want a lot of voices. But the answer to this gentleman's questions, and I think we asked about 15 or 16 questions during the interview, we could have asked him what color is the sky, and he would have woven diversity into the answer. You know, he was just so obviously trying to hit the hot buttons that it became annoying after a while. And the guy came across as disingenuous. So I think wording is really important. And today, of course, the one that really gets me, I don't know if you've run into this one much, but it's the word hack. So,
oh yeah,
yeah,
that's way overused.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, we've created a hack. Yeah, well, what does that mean? Well, we fixed the problem. Okay, well, why don't you just say you fixed the problem instead of you created a hack?
Or we have an easier way to do X, Y, Z.
Exactly. It's just amazing. Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot. You're a PR expert. You've been in the PR business for many years. An icon of the industry, if you will. And by the way, Beverly Hills based, and I can't think of a more cutthroat area for somebody in the PR business to be than in Beverly Hills. You've survived, you've prospered, and you probably know a lot of tricks of the trade. Now, look, I think every small business out there would love to have the capital to hire a high-profile PR firm like the Blaine Group. But I know that costs money, you know, $2,500 a month, $5,000 a month, probably high-profile contracts, $10,000 or $15,000 a month. The small business doesn't necessarily have that, those types of resources. They might put you in their business plan for year two or for year three, but what can a small entrepreneur do themselves that can gain exposure along the lines of PR without spending a lot of money?
They can create their own press materials. They can research who in the press should receive them. And they need to think about, does the local newspaper reach the customers that they're seeking? Or are they better reached through a magazine or a podcast? I mean, bestsellers have been made just on podcasts. So there's a lot they need to know or learn. Conversely, they could consult with experts in the PR field, buy a block of their time, and have some help developing that plan, and pay less, and then self-implement.
You know, that is a great idea. Now, I mean, would you offer that kind of service? Would you sit down with somebody, say, for an hourly fee of some sort, sit down with them for, you know, like a couple of hours and say, well, if I was to put together a plan, here's some of the things that I would do for you. But now you could maybe try and do some of those things yourself.
I have done that. I have also years ago created what I called a master plan, which was a do-it-yourself PR program. And it gave people the initial press kit, the do-it-yourself implementation instructions, an up-to-date media list, and the right to call in and say, this just happened, now what do I do?
That's amazing. Is that still available?
It is.
Oh, wow. And
it's not inexpensive, but I'm happy to do that. And it's, quite frankly, it's the way some new companies initially get the coverage they need and then can hire us later. And if the president or CEO or founder has a savvy assistant who can devote an hour or two a day to implementing the program, that's probably the best person because they know the company well. And they're going to know the right things to say.
Wow, that's a great idea. So, Devin, you were kind enough to come on the show today with me. I don't know. Somebody may. I'm presuming somebody at some point in time is going to listen to this podcast.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah. So, but what I would ask you to do is if somebody wanted to contact you. And bend your ear a little bit or maybe even engage your services, what's the best way to contact Devin Blaine at the Blaine Group?
They can call 310-360-1499, or they can email Devon, D-E-V-O-N, at Blaine, B-L-A-I-N-E, Group, Inc., I-N-C, .com.
Okay, that's fantastic. And I would highly recommend, if you are a company out there that needs traditional public relations, and you're looking for somebody to do that for you, that you consider calling Devon. She knows what she's doing. She's been around. She's got the connections. And I'm sure that she will help you with your public relations needs. I'm going to just add one additional thing that I think people out there should be cognizant of. You mentioned that anybody can publish anything on Amazon, and that's a good thing and a bad thing. I've published three books on...
Not just on Amazon. I was also thinking about blogs.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's true. So you can think of this both as a kind of a marketing tool that you could implement for your own business. I mean, I'm doing this podcast right now. The cost is basically zero. I downloaded the software to do the recording for free. The software is free. All I need is my computer, which I have, and a reasonable microphone. We're going to put this podcast up on the Polk Institute website, and basically the web guy does that, so it doesn't really cost us anything, and somebody might listen to it, and that would be a way for getting additional exposure for your business. So I would...
That's an excellent idea.
And particularly if you make sure that your podcast is not just a 15 or 20 minute commercial, if you're actually providing some content or some value, some ideas that people can use. And the other reason I think a podcast is a good idea is because I'm a reader. I love reading stuff. But the reality
is... I do as well.
Yeah, but we're old school. A lot of people today, they're not readers. And in fact, I've had people come to me and say, Mike, I'd love to buy your book as soon as you come up with the audio version. Well, I don't have an audio version yet. But they don't read. So, but if you've got a podcast, people can listen to it. So that's certainly a good idea.
That's a good idea. And I do hear that things are flipping, that a lot of people, millennials actually prefer books now because they can carry them around with them. They can highlight them. They don't have that blue glare from the screen. So it's probably half and half these days.
Well, that's good because I'm a huge believer in books. And I'm also a big believer, and I know we're kind of wandering here, but that's okay. It's my show. I can wander. I also believe in self-education, and I think one of the best, you know, I'm a university professor. Should people go to university? Well, I believe you should go to university, but don't confine learning to the university environment. You can learn just by picking up any old book, and I'll tell you, I published three books on Amazon. If you're interested in finding more about them, you can go to ProfessorManahan.com. But here was an interesting thing I did. I bought a book off of Amazon about selling books on Amazon. I think the book cost me $19.95, so $20. I mean, I've paid more for a cocktail in Manhattan than this book cost me. The book had some really good ideas about stuff I didn't know about publishing books on Amazon, and I was able to go in and change a couple of my book descriptions, and just by changing my book descriptions, my sales increased. So, yeah, books hold an awful lot of information. Get them, read them, and implement the information that you get.
I'm also big on anyone who wants to implement a PR program, be a news junkie. Know what's trending. Know what's new.
Yeah. This reminds me back in the heyday of the .com eras, back in the late 90s, early 2000s. You know, if you were selling golden bathtubs, as long as you put goldenbathtubs.com on it, you'd get the attention of the media. But you're right. You've got to be in line with what's trending. Anyway, Devon, This has been a real pleasure. We're running out of time. We could talk forever about this stuff, but I want to keep these podcasts to a approximately 30-minute time limit. We're coming up on the 30 minutes. So, Devin, once again, thank you so much for being with me today. I really, really do appreciate it.
My pleasure, Michael. Thank you so much.
And that's it for another edition of the Polk Institute podcast. I am your host, Michael Manahan. Thank you so much for joining us today.